Honourable Member Welcome from a week-long constituency. I hope you have at least one opportunity to rest, one day of rest. But also a very welcome to the Department of Social Development. And if there's other stakeholders here today, also very welcome. I could see that the Department of Social Development was very much on time this morning, if not a bit early. That's very commendable. Let me apologize for us starting a bit late. That the members haven't seen each other for a week, so they were getting reacquainted. Honourable members, if you look at the agenda for today, it's the deliberations on the Social Assistance Amendment Bill. That's to go clause by clause through the bill and also considering the public input. Now, we've dealt with the, before we broke for constituency week, we dealt with the public inputs, but I was contacted by DART, a researcher, not any of the leadership of DART, this is of stability. Around the input that they've sent to the committee, saying that they've misunderstood there was a miscommunication. But I think it was more the fact that they've misunderstood the advertisement as well as the time, as well as them coming to the committee and making their presentation. So they've asked that we could, whether we could give them a chance to present to the committee, and I said we cannot, because in terms of the schedule of the committee, we fairly advanced, and that opportunity was 2 weeks ago. I said that we could make a provision of seeing them maybe later, myself as the chairperson, to listen to the input. They say they've made a written input, but I want to propose to the committee that we do not accept any late inputs at this stage, because we are going to run into trouble with our legislative program that we have. And that for today, we look at if members remember correctly, we had, when we looked at the bill itself or the public submissions, there was a statement that we should look at not including children in the definition of disability, especially children linked to the care dependency grant, but there should be that distinction in section one of the bill. So I've just conferred with the department, and they informed me that they have worked on a definition and on the section, an insertion in section one. That will be dealing with section 1A and B, but also with the definition as it starts in section 1. So with that, honourable members, I thought that could we give the department, they don't have printed copies for us, but they're going to make it available to us afterwards. And then I think we can request the state law advisor to put it in the existing bill, for us, so that at our next meeting we then leave it together. We see it as an insertion, and then we can then consider whether we accept it or not, whether we want to amend it or not, in terms of procedure. Is that acceptable to members, or is there any other proposal or amendment to that? Honourable Tsweta?
I need clarity. You say that, say they did not, I didn't understand what you said, that is misunderstood in the whole process, because they were given a chance to present. If you could clarify that, Chair, thank you.
Well, the researcher said to me that there was a miscommunication. But I think it's more misunderstanding on her part, that they didn't know that they should present. Was that 2 weeks ago at the committee? But it was very clear that they were going to present. So apparently they did not. So they wanted to know whether they can't come and present to the committee. And the time for the public hearings has passed. Honourable Member Lamula.
Madam Chair, I hear what you say about people being late with their submission. I just want to know if it's possible to get the view or the opinion of the state law advisor or our legal advisor on if the committee can land themselves in any problem or any challenge, not allowing those that still want to make submissions to make submissions. I know it is completely interfering with our timetable, but can we only have clarity on if we are running the risk of being legally in a legal process involved if we do not allow them to make their submissions? Thank you. Just for clarity.
I think, let me just give clarity to the committee to say that they were on the program, and we did receive their submission, but they didn't turn up. Advisor, you care to comment?
Chair, I also think that you were speaking about the legislative program, that you need to fulfill certain time frames. It's largely within the discretion of the committee, but problems could arise if other parties want to make submissions which are late. People need to be treated fairly, basically. But it's still within the discretion of the committee, but it might impact on the time frame that the committee had established to pass the bill.
You covered Honourable Member Lamula, Honourable Member Nelson.
Jefferson, I would think that if DART had made a written presentation, all parties that made written presentations were given the opportunity or a time slot to do their presentation to the portfolio. So they would have known that they had the, and I think it was confirmed, if we can just hear from. So if they have not turned up to make their presentation to the portfolio, it is not as though the input is not being considered, because it is on paper before us. So I think we should continue with the process, and I think we would be opening ourselves up to other organizations who would then also want to make a late submission. So I think we should continue with the process as we have scheduled it. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I'm looking at the number of submissions that we have, the list. And I wanted us to, so that we are we know which ones submitted, and we check how many submissions people did not come to do their presentation. I see that here we have about 10, if I was mistaken, and I've marked 5 that made their presentation. Am I right to say there are 5? So those that did not do their presentation are also 5, and they were given a chance to do their presentation. And maybe I do not understand what they say, what was the reason for them not to come to do their submissions. But I would also like to say, when we pass legislation, we must be careful of making sure that all people are given chance to do their presentations. We know issues that were raised in those submissions were similar, and we would like to hear. I know about time, Chair, that really, when we pass legislation, we must be sure that we are on time, we keep our time frame. But my worry is there is this challenge of people go and go to court and department pay a lot of money. And we would like to hear what those people are going to say, whether, I'm not saying today we should not continue with our program, but maybe at a later stage, before we pass the, just make sure that it's done now, we listen to what they're going to say. I don't know if we're going to have that chance. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I think the fact that we have two houses makes it, if you miss the opportunity to attend to a public hearing in the National Assembly to make a presentation, you can always do it in the NCLP. I don't think it's an entire opportunity lost. I think the fact that we have the submission and that members had an opportunity to look at it and then to whether it's going to influence their views or not, that's entirely up to the honourable members themselves. I think that is fine, and I think the committee is entirely correct to proceed with the agenda, with the decision that the chairperson has made. And I'm sure even in terms of the inputs of the honourable members of the committee, you are in agreement with that.
Thank you, Chair. I think you don't need to be concerned about issues of constitutionality when it comes to this, because it's in Parliament's discretion whether they want to have oral hearings or written submissions. And Parliament has done that. They've had sufficient public participation on the bill. And I don't think there have been any problems with that.
Thank you. Can we proceed with the agenda? Earlier in my input, I've alluded to the fact that during the hearings, we've come up the issue around including a child that is on the care dependent grant to be included under the definition of disability. And the department has prepared a presentation for us that will give clarity on the matter as raised by the honourable members last a week and a half ago. So can we get over to the SASA at this stage and the Department of Social Development just to take us through, and we said that you'll give us the information afterwards, and then we're going to look at the proposed amendment, and I'm sure our legal advisor will make sure that it is inserted into the amendment section of section 1, so that we can see how it is, and the committee can consider it or reject it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. We met after this, the previous meeting of the Portfolio Committee on the comments which were raised by members of the public. And we also met with people from SASA to try and respond to the issues they have raised. In this presentation, we will try and deal with those issues, and more particularly about the ones that you have raised, that you indicated now. I'm not going to go into the whole presentation outline, but I propose to go directly into the background. Madam Chair, on the 30th of November, the department published the regulations for, rather the bill for public comments, and we did not receive any comments from the public, and subsequently the Portfolio Committee also published the bill for public comments, and as a result thereof, there was a public hearing on the 20th and the 21st, where seven organizations made oral presentations. Incidentally, the organization that the Portfolio Committee has been talking about actually made a presentation on that day. They made an oral presentation, that, and that's also that and DPSA, who also made presentations. Chair, on the comments which were raised, we tried to categorize them into two, that those that we thought were unrelated to the bill, to the purpose of the bill, and those which we thought were related to the purpose of the bill. The general feeling was that the new definition that we were proposing was going to exclude people with chronic illness. And as a result, there was a recommendation that there must be a chronic illness grant. And I think we've got quite a lot of those who presented who felt very strongly about the chronic illness grant. There was also a view, Madam Chair, that in terms of the current criteria that we are using, we are using a CD4 count as an exclusion or an inclusion criteria for those who apply for a disability grant. Some of the people who also presented, Madam Chair, indicated that the current definition is unclear, and had requested that one of them to provide us with the definition that they consider clear. We still have not received such an input. There was one comment that was made, or suggestion that was made, that in the definition of disability, we are also using disability to define disability, and that we should rather, in the body of that definition, use impairment as opposed to using disability. One of the comments is the one that you also raised, Madam Chair, is around the new definition and its effect on the care dependency grant. There was a feeling that this definition is not appropriate or would create challenges for the care dependency grant. One member of the public also raised the issue where they were saying in Section 12, where they use a conjunction and replace and with all in that section, and that as a result, they were of the view that it will disqualify older persons from receiving a grant in aid. The following comments, Madam Chair, are some of the comments that we consider to be related to the purpose of the bill. And the first one was the fact that in terms of the proposed amendment to Section 18, we are requiring that there must be a reconsideration of the decision by SASA before applicants or beneficiaries can appeal to the independent tribunal or to the department. Their view was that such a proposal or amendment would actually prolong the process of appealing directly to the independent tribunal. Some also indicated that they would rather, if we go ahead with the reconsidered amendments, we should allow for the reconsideration. We should then ensure that such a reconsideration does not take more than 30 days. Madam Chair, we are now proposing to deal with the responses in as far as the issues were raised by members of the public. The first one related to the definition of disabilities and its purported exclusion of chronic illnesses. Chair, our position is that this is distinction between disability grants as defined in the Act and also chronic illness. They are two different concepts. And we use a definition that is to this effect to say a chronic illness is defined as an illness that is prolonged, does not resolve spontaneously, and is rarely cured completely. And this is our understanding of a chronic illness as opposed to a disability grant. Now, in terms of the current and the proposed definition of disability, a person with purely a chronic illness will not be considered to have a disability. So it means as long as your problem is purely chronic illness, you would not be considered to be a person with a disability, and you would therefore be disqualified from qualifying for a disability grant. Now, part of the new definition, Madam Chair, is also because we were of the view that there was no standard assessment tool in terms of disability grant, and as a result, some people with chronic illnesses ended up receiving a disability grant, which was not the intention, and this is what we are trying to address. We are also saying, Madam Chair, that this bill does not deal, the proposed amendment does not deal with the issue of a chronic illness grant, but rather purely around disability. In response to how we define a disability grant by using disability by also using in the body of that definition disability, we are in support of a proposal that we should, in the body of that definition, use impairment as opposed to disability. So there was also a definition, an issue raised around the fact that the new definition of disability would pose problems for care-dependent grants. And we've as a result come up with a definition that will only deal with care-dependent grants, and also at the same time ensure that when you want to do an assessment of an application for a care-dependent grant, you should not look at disability as defined currently, but rather confine ourselves to care-dependent child. We try to define what a care-dependent child is defined as. It's a child who has a moderate to severe limitation in his or her ability to perform daily life activities in relation to developmental milestones as a result of a physical, sensory, communication, intellectual, or mental impairment, rendering him or her to require permanent care or support services. So this is anybody applying for a care dependent grant would have to meet this requirement. This would have to fall within the definition of care dependent child as opposed to a definition of disability. Chair, there was also an issue raised around having replaced end with or in section 12, and could not come across any such a replacement in section 12 that would have the effect of disqualifying older persons from receiving grant aid. So the issue around the fact that once we introduce an amendment to section 18, which would lead to a reconsideration of SASSA's decision, and that it would lead to an inordinate delay in the finalization of the appeal. We suggest that, in fact, section 18 says the whole reconsideration would be done as prescribed, which then means that the regulations will set out in detail the procedure, the time frames within which a reconsideration has to be done. And at that stage, once we start drafting the regulations on the reconsideration, members of the public will be involved. We'll come back again to this committee to make a presentation on what the provisions of those regulations would be, and also to seek guidance from the portfolio committee. The issue of the time frames is not something that we are very particular about. In fact, the requirement is that we should be able to do so. In terms of partial, it must be within 90 days, but we would not have a problem in trying to shorten the period. The only time where we would have a problem is where we want to make it longer than the law currently provides. Chair, in addition to some of the things that we've raised, we also thought we needed to propose new changes in light of some of the changes that have already taken place but have not been effected into the act. Like, for example, there has been a policy change to extend the child support grant to children up to the age of 18 years. But the current act defines a primary caregiver as somebody who's older than the age of 16, which would then create a problem for someone who's over. Basically, it would mean you may have a primary caregiver who's 16 years in respect of a applicant for a child receiving a child support grant who is actually 18 years. So it creates an anomaly where a person who's younger to the other child could be considered to be a primary caregiver. And we thought we needed to align it with the current policy changes and the current child support grant. On the section 14, this section provides for the appeal, where we are required to notify FASA once it has considered an application and has rejected the application. It has to notify the applicant of his or her right to appeal to the independent tribunal. However, now that we've actually amended section 18 to include a beneficiary, rather to include a reconsideration. We thought we needed to also include reconsideration here as part of the right that we need to notify the applicant or the beneficiary of, which would then mean, we would then say to the applicant to say, you've got the right to request a reconsideration of the decision by SAFA before you can then appeal, which means we notify you of both rights, but you also indicate the order in which you must exercise those rights. Which means you must first request the reconsideration, and then if it fails, and then you can then appeal to the independent tribunal. Well, I think I've already indicated, Chair, that if... Okay, I've already indicated the amendment to the provision related to the primary caregiver. Thank you, Chair. If I left something, my colleagues would assist.
Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, if we go to the first page of the presentation. Honourable Members, is there any questions? Honourable Member Lamula. Yeah, definitely. Any other members? Questions of clarity? Honourable Member Tsweta.
Chair, for me, it's very clear. It's the issues that we as portfolio committee discussed. All I can say is to thank the department for making sure that all the complaints, whether it's called complaints from the people that submitted are considered. One is that of impairment instead of, I'm looking at the bill now, because impairment is at section one. So if that is covered, I'm bit heavy, because it's something that came from submissions. And then, Chair, I also agree with the department when you say we leave chronic illnesses as it is, because after submissions and after deliberations by submissions, it became clear that there is a confusion that of people not knowing between chronic and disability. So I think I agree with the department. The only thing that I would like to I'm not quite sure in the bill where the prime, when you refer to the definition of primary health care giver, looking at the bill, where is it here in the bill? Is it a new matter or it's in the bill? I need to be helped there. Thank you.
Any other members? Just clarity on the primary caregiver. Who's going to answer a question from Sasa?
Okay, thanks. We're trying to check the act where that provision is made. Yeah, it's just an amendment because in the Social Assistance Act, a primary caregiver is defined as somebody who's older than 16 years. Yeah, but as a result of the changes to the extension of the child support grant, which will be given to children until the age of 18, we are then proposing that we change and make it, define it as somebody who's older than 18 years. Because SASA currently has serious challenges that a 16-year-old who can receive a grant in his or her right, but now they also become a primary caregiver. And so that's what we're trying to deal with.
That is a new amendment.
Chair, when you look currently in the current act, section 1, where it says that person would be a primary caregiver, somebody older than 16 years old. I'd like to respond to the honourable member's question as to where in the bill is defined.
I agree with the definition of a care-dependent child, but there needs to be an amendment of Section 7, because Section 7 then still reads, a person is subject to Section 5, eligible for care dependency grant if he or she is a parent, primary caregiver, or foster parent of a child that requires and receives permanent care or support services due to his or her disability, and the definition of disability then would still create a conflict. So I just had a quick look at it. So perhaps it could be amended something along the lines that a person is subject to Section 5, eligible for care dependency grant if he or she is a parent, primary caregiver, or foster parent of a care dependent child who requires and receives permanent care support services due to his or her condition.
Members have that? The section? I want to propose a way forward out of the proposals and